For almost 30 years, Justice Antonin Nino Scalia was a larger-than-life president on the bench. A brilliant legal mind with an energetic style, an incisive wit, and colorful opinions. We honor his extraordinary service to our nation and remember one of the towering legal figures of our time. A devout Catholic, he was a proud father of 9 children and grandfather to many loving grandchildren. Justice Scalia was both an avid hunter and an opera lover, a passion for music that he shared with his dear colleague and friend, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
That's President Barack Obama speaking this weekend about the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. He has been both vilified harshly and praised in death. What was the legal judicial legacy of Justice Antonin Scalia? Certainly left a mark. What was the mark that he left both on the court and on the United States? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Monday afternoon, February the 15th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Ed Meese, 75th Attorney General of the United States, will join us here for the first few minutes of the program to talk about the judicial legacy of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. A little bit after that, we will talk with Dr. Carl Fikencher, our regular series with him. Looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the 3-year lectionary, Jesus Sorrows Over Jerusalem, in the reading, the gospel reading for the second Sunday in the season of Lent. Pastor Tom Baker will be our guest after that. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson, The Temptation of Jesus, in Luke chapter 4. Then we'll return to the subject of the judicial legacy of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Dr. Robert George of Princeton University will be our guest to reflect upon his legacy when it comes to life, to natural marriage, and to the free exercise of religion. Joining us to talk about the judicial legacy of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, Ed Meese. He's a regular guest. He's 75th Attorney General of the United States and Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow Emeritus for the Heritage Foundation and Distinguished Visiting Fellow for the Hoover Institute. Ed, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
What were your first reactions and thoughts when you heard about the passing of Justice Scalia?
Well, I was obviously very saddened and shocked, actually, because I don't think any of us were prepared for this. And Nino Scalia was a very good friend. I've known him for many years, admired him as a man, admired him as a Christian, admired him also, obviously, as a judge.
So let's talk about him just a little bit as a man, from your personal recollection and dealing with him over those many years. How would you describe Antonin Scalia, the man?
Well, I would describe him as a great human being. He was very friendly. He was outgoing and engaging with people. He had a real ability to be friendly and work with and engage with people who may have differed with him on legal matters or differed with him on philosophy or policy. And he was a very outgoing person in the sense of helping other people. He was particularly fond of providing as a mentor and as a kind of a coach, if you will, to young lawyers, and was very active with the Federalist Society, which is an organization of lawyers and students in law schools. He did a lot of speaking and was always a great favorite because of his humor, his great wit, and as well as his deep understanding of the law and his commitment to the Constitution.
Why did President Reagan, with whom you served, why did he appoint Justice Scalia?
Well, as the president considered this back in 1986, he was looking for someone who was a strong constitutionalist who believed in the Constitution as it was actually written, and not as some judges would try to do, which was to put their own policy preferences or their own ideas into the Constitution. He wanted somebody who believed in the Constitution as the founders and those who provided amendments for it over the years after that time actually wrote. And so that was one thing. The other thing was he had a distinguished background. He'd been a lawyer in private practice. He'd been a law professor. He had been a high-level official in the Department of Justice. And at that time, he'd also had several years as a judge on the appellate court. So he was a prime candidate in every way, from a philosophical and scholarly, and also as a person of great integrity.
So speak a little more detail about that, Ed, if you would. His judicial philosophy, really in a lot of ways, he was the leader of this particular way of looking at American jurisprudence and the U.S. Constitution.
Yes, he was. And in terms of his integrity, often he was forced to write opinions or join in opinions of other justices that were the result of which was a policy that he really didn't approve of. But because that was the law, he felt compelled to agree and to write as the law was, not as he wished it to be. And in that sense, he was observing the best qualities of our democratic republic, and that is that the people, through their elected representatives, have the last say, and that it was the judge's job to interpret the law, not to put his own ideas into it.
How would you describe his role on the court?
I think his role on the court was one of being the conscience, if you will, the constitutional conscience of the court. He was very strong in his views. Sometimes he had to dissent because he felt the other justices or a majority of them were going against the Constitution. And he did it in a very witty and a very strong fashion. But at the same time, that did not deter him from being friendly to these other justices. And as a result, some of the people who disagreed with him the most were his greatest friends because he liked people. And at the same time, he was always true to the Constitution.
What would you think are some of his key opinions, either in the majority or the minority, writing opinions? What would they be?
Well, I think a couple of key opinions, had to do with religion and the people's view of the world from a religious sense. One, of course, was the infamous decision in Roe against Wade, which approved abortions and made the abortions mandatory against the laws that existed in many states at the time. And the other one that he was very strong on was the position of marriage, that marriage, as the Bible provides and as the law provided for centuries in almost every social situation, every civilization, that marriage was a union between a man and a woman. And he was very strong in his dissent there. In some other cases, he led the court in approving various things that were constitutional in nature, particularly the responsibilities and the limitations on government. Those were the kinds of cases in which he was able to put together a majority which limited the government in certain situations.
I want to read some of the reaction to the death of Justice Scalia that came through social media in the hours after his death was announced, from kind of the liberal sector of the press, from Charles Manning, who's senior style editor of Cosmopolitan. He said, "The devil's back in hell, yay." Jerry Lee, deputy books editor for BuzzFeed, said that saying that a racist bigot is a racist bigot isn't speaking ill of the dead, it's just the facts. And then also there's another one here from Sylvia Killingsworth, who's managing editor for The New Yorker. "I wish I could be a fly on the wall for Scalia's chat with the devil." How does that strike you, Ed?
It strikes me that it reflects more on these people who say things like that than it does on Justice Scalia, except to say that if you have people as evil as that, it must mean that Justice Scalia was a pretty good man if he's the person that they hated.
I would note here that Justice Alito, Justice Thomas, Justice Roberts, and then now the sainted Justice Scalia, all of them have one thing in common, that is their devout Roman Catholic faith. Is there a relationship between these deeply held religious convictions and a constructionist view of the U.S. Constitution in your mind, Ed?
Well, I think that there may well be. Obviously, the Constitution is not of one religion or another, but I think that the integrity that a strong religious viewpoint promotes, then I believe, really continues over into how people view other aspects of their life. And so I think in that case, the integrity that Justice Scalia and those other gentlemen that you mentioned have followed is indeed consistent with their religious faith.
You and I are both Lutheran. Do you think that we will see a confessional Lutheran perhaps at some point in the future on the Supreme Court?
Well, I don't know. I would hope that we would, because, again, I believe that the people who follow the Lutheran faith, just as we talked about these gentlemen following the Catholic faith, have that same sense of integrity. And certainly the people that I have met in leadership positions, and I'd say particularly the chaplains, the Lutheran chaplains that I've met, are great examples of our faith in action.
We're talking with Ed Meese, 75th Attorney General of the United States, about the judicial legacy of the Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. When we come back, what should Republican senators do as the president seeks to fill Justice Scalia's chair?
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. On this Monday afternoon, February the 15th, we're talking about the judicial legacy of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Ed Meese, the 75th Attorney General of the United States. Ronald Reagan, Distinguished Fellow Emeritus for the Heritage Foundation, Distinguished Visiting Fellow for the Hoover Institute, is our guest. Ed, what should Senate Republicans do at this point now that the president seems anxious to fill Justice Scalia's chair before he leaves office?
Well, I believe that they should not fill it until the election has taken place and we have a new president, hopefully a president who believes in the Constitution, because we definitely have gone in the other direction under the current president. The two nominees that were confirmed, that he had been thus appointed to the court, have certainly not followed constitutionalism, not followed the original intent of those who drafted the Constitution and the amendments. And so I think that there is a duty of the Senate not to fill the vacancy with someone who does not believe in the Constitution. And this president, unfortunately, has had such a contempt for the Constitution by his own actions and by those actions of agencies and departments under his control that I think there's no chance that he would appoint someone who would continue the kinds of views that Justice Scalia had in terms of preserving and defending the Constitution.
How do you respond to someone who says, well, that's just playing politics with the court? What's your response, Ed?
Well, I don't see it being as playing politics to preserve the Constitution. But the interesting thing is that the other side would have done exactly the same thing if the situation would be reversed from their point of view. As a matter of fact, Senator Schumer said in 2007, when he had the situation in reverse with a Democrat Senate and a Republican president, George W. Bush, he said that he would go to any length to keep President Bush from having an appointment to the Supreme Court if such a situation arose. And he said that in 2007, which was more than a year before the election year itself.
So what do you think the future of the court is now? I mean, if you've watched this for decades, and as you look forward, what do you think's going to happen with the court with the unexpected death of Antonin Scalia?
Well, I would hope, and particularly if the Republicans have the opportunity to wait until there is a new president, that a president would appoint another constitutionalist, someone who has the integrity of Justice Scalia, and that we would get back to taking the politics out of this. When people have upheld the Constitution, I don't view that as a politicized decision, but rather what the founders intended when they wrote the Constitution and gave it to us. And if we're going to preserve the kind of a country that was originally intended, and that is a country in which the elected officials, the Congress, and the president are the ones that make the policy, but that the court, without having a political angle to it, decide what is appropriate according to the Constitution, and then we'll get back to some sort of a reasonable policy and a reasonable commitment to the rule of law, which is what this country badly needs. And this would provide stability It would provide continuity and would provide predictability, which is what law should be.
What can all Americans learn about their own Constitution, about this foundational document for our life together as a nation? What can they learn from the way that Antonin Scalia looked at it?
Well, I think they can realize that the Constitution was set up to protect the people from an intrusive and an oppressive government is one thing. Another thing is that the Constitution itself makes a lot of sense, that it is a constructive document in the sense of providing for people so that minority rights are protected, while at the same time a majority is able to prevail on most issues, but without overruling or overrunning the rights of the minority. So it's a balanced document that is good and has served this country well for over 230 years and would continue to serve us well if it continues to be interpreted as it actually reads.
As you look over your own storied career in government service and in law, do you think that at this particular moment in American history, the U.S. Constitution is particularly in peril?
Well, I believe it is, and I believe it has been, particularly over the last seven years or so, in the sense that the current administration doesn't seem willing to follow the Constitution. We had a decision just the other day concerning the Environmental Protection Agency and certain regulations they had adopted, and the court stayed those regulations pending further litigation. And yet the agency said, we're going to go right ahead and do what we've always been doing. This contempt for the Constitution, this unwillingness to follow the Constitution, I think is a cancer eating at the kind of a government that we have had and the kind of integrity of our public officials at the highest levels. And I think it's a very serious situation, and that's one of the reasons why I believe the constitutional government in this country is in the greatest peril it has been at any time in history, with the exception of the Civil War.
Ed Meese is 75th Attorney General of the United States. He is Ronald Reagan Distinguished Fellow Emeritus for the Heritage Foundation and Distinguished Visiting Fellow for the Hoover Institute. Ed, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.